Legoland Podcast with David Amoyal.
Benvenuti, as we would say in Italy. Welcome to all of you that don't speak Italian. Thank you so much for joining us for the first episode of the Calcioland Podcast of the Week. This is already our 160th episode total. And today's podcast is brought to you by our great friends at Euro Fantasy Game. I hope you guys have been playing the various fantasy football games for La Liga, Premier League, Serie A, Dutch League, and the Champions League. And also a place where you can read a lot of excellent articles on Serie A. I saw Matt Santangelo wrote about Allan's impact at Napoli. You have Chloe Beresford and John Solano covering Serie A there as well. And I wrote an article on yesterday, Sunday, on the winners of the Serie A season so far. I'll have the second part of that. The losers of the season, where I think my boy Milinkovic-Savic is going to be at the top on Thursday. So today it's just Alex and I. We don't have a guest. Gloomy day in Boston, but a lot to talk about in Serie A. So what I figured we'd do today at the top, we're going to be joined by our producer, co-host, Alex Goldberg, who is killing it on YouTube with his various videos. So, Alex, I have a couple of topics on Serie A that I wanted to touch base with you. And I've asked you, let's start talking about goal scorers in Serie A. And I've asked you a variation of this question a few weeks ago, but I'm going to ask it again to kind of gauge to see kind of where you're at. So I'm going to ask you, who do you think is going to score more goals by the end of the season between these three strikers? And please note, I'm not asking who's going to lead Serie A. This is just these three. So, of course, we have man of the season so far, Genoa striker Piontek, and that's the correct pronunciation of his name. We have Gonzalo Higuain off to his best start in Serie A as far as goals scored, made a huge impact at Milan, and then we have old reliable Ciro Immobile, not old in age, but reliable in Serie A. You don't even really need to blink. He's already at 10, 15 goals before you know it. So, Alex, of these three, who do you think is going to have more goals by the end of the season?
All right, David. Well, yeah. And did you say it's Piontek? Is that the correct pronunciation?
Yeah, so I saw on Di Marzio's side, we had an interview with Genoa's president, Preziosi, and he made a point of saying that's how it's pronounced. I had read it in Gazzetta dello Sport, too. So I'm going on the assumption that that's what it is.
All right, fair enough. Well, with all that said, David, I'm not going to choose him, even though he has 9 goals and he's 4 ahead of Ciro Immobile and 5 ahead of Higuain. I really want to say Gonzalo Higuain because it feels like as Milan gets more and more in sync, he is going to be the beneficiary of more opportunities to score goals. He's got 4 right now, but I am still going. I got to stay consistent here because he asked me before the season started who I think would win the Golden Boot, who would have the most goals, and I said Ciro Immobile. And there's nothing going on right now except for the fact that Piontek has 9 goals. There's nothing going on right now to scare me away from that Ciro Immobile prediction. He started off the season with a great goal against Napoli. He's still in pretty good form. But David, my number one reason why I'm still taking Immobile, besides the fact that he has been nothing but a proven goal scorer in Serie A, my number one reason is the fact that Milinkovic-Savic is still having trouble getting out of the gates. He's had a good game here and there, but overall, he has still been below average, especially for his standard. So I think once Milinkovic-Savic revs up the engines a little bit more, and I think he will, I'm totally not counting Milinkovic-Savic out from having a good season. I think Immobile is going to be the beneficiary of more opportunities than he's already had. And Luis Alberto's playing well, but they also have new players, new parts that we've talked about on this podcast that are also helping Lazio improve. So I'm going to go with Ciro Immobile. I do think Piontek is just going to slow down a little bit, and that's probably more because he's on Genoa. He just doesn't have as good of players around him as Immobile does on Lazio and as Higuain does at Milan. So I am sticking to my guns, David. I am saying Ciro Immobile will lead out of all three of those players. What about you?
Yeah, I tend to agree with that. I'm going to agree with you. I'm going to pick Immobile, but it's very close. I mean, look, at this point, it's like, you know, we keep thinking Piontek's going to slow down, and he just doesn't. I agree he doesn't have as good a supporting cast. At the same time, he is a one-man wrecking crew. I have a feeling he's going to end up scoring maybe more goals than the rest of Genoa combined. That doesn't seem that far-fetched. So in a way, that can also be an advantage. But yeah, I mean, to me, a great point is that the supporting cast for Immobile hasn't been great this season. We talked already about Milinkovic-Savic. Luis Alberto's been up and down. I saw the Lazio Ultras had a really tough banner against both Savic and Luis Alberto, saying that they only care about money. They both, you know, signed extensions. Milinkovic-Savic just recently. And another wild card is Correa could be really, really good and provide, you know, the creativity that Felipe Anderson, when he left, took away with him. It's close, but I think you can make a great case for Higuain as well. Suso's been great recently. It looks like they've developed really, really good chemistry. Kalanoglu hasn't been very good this season quite yet. I'm a big believer in him. He really impressed me in the second half of the season. So it's really close. I'm going to agree with you, Immobile, but I could see Higuain. And you know what's interesting is Immobile already has 3 seasons with over 20 goals in Serie A. Higuain has only 2. Granted, he's come pretty close in the others, and we know he broke the record for most goals in a season. But you can almost say that Immobile is almost more of a guarantee to get to that 20-goal plateau. So definitely an interesting topic there. It's great, though, that, you know, in Serie A, we have so many intriguing strikers. So the next thing I wanted to talk to you about, and today I tweeted a bunch of questions. I always like to kind of get a pulse from Twitter on where people are at on some topics. The next one I wanted to talk about was Juve. We talked a lot about them with Adam Digby on Thursday. We are going to talk about them more in the Twitter questions we got today. But let's just talk about them on the pitch. They just really look like a wrecking crew. They went to Udine. That game was never in doubt. The scoreline probably isn't a true reflection of what we saw. Juve's, you know, this season it feels like Allegri's getting more out of his offensive weapons. I'm not going to say the most out of, because I still think there's a margin for improvement. But they really look unstoppable. There's already people in the Italian media that are wondering, is Juve just going to win every game this season? And look, that's probably pretty far-fetched, but I wanted to ask you the same question, Alex, I asked my Twitter followers. How many games do you think they're actually going to lose or draw? So I'm going to sum them up in a couple of categories. You can either pick one of these groups or pick a precise number. I'm going to go 0-4 total losses or draw, less than 6, or less than 8. Where do you think Juve is going to land? How many games do you think they're not going to win this season? And this is only in Serie A.
All right, so if I was betting, I'd want to say less than 4 because the odds of that are going to be nice for money. However, I still think it's possible. But David, I'm going to say technically I'm saying less than 8 because I think it's going to be exactly 6. So that does not fall under less than 6. That falls under less than 8. I think they're going to draw 3 and lose 3 in this whole entire season, which makes for just a ridiculous, ridiculous campaign. And I think the majority of those draws and or losses are going to come once the Champions League really starts to rev up. I think right now there's going to be nothing stopping them in the near future once we're back from the international break from continuing on with this dominance. I mean, looking at the table, David, of course, they're already 6 points ahead of Napoli. But when you look at goal differential, it's even more shocking. Their goal differential is a plus 13. Next closest is Sampdoria and Fiorentina with 8. So they're just dominating. So I think some of those losses and or draws are going to come once they probably need to put more eggs in the Champions League basket, which just works out really well for Allegri. You build this ginormous, ginormous lead this early on in Serie A, and you can afford a couple slip-ups down the road in Serie A, and you can focus completely on the Champions League. So I'm going to say exactly 6, 3 losses, 3 draws. That's my take, David. What about you?
So I have to say that when I was tweeting this, the numbers looked so absurd that 0-4 or even 4-6 would even be realistic options. So what I did is I did a little research on Juve in this streak of titles that they've won. So last season, there were 8 games that they didn't win or that they didn't win. So a combination of losses and draw, 8 last season. The year before, that was the previous 2 seasons, so 2016-17, 2015-16, that was 9. And the best season under Conte, when they broke the 100-point barrier, that was 102 points, there was only five. And I was kind of shocked by that, but you do the math, it adds up. And I have to say, maybe these numbers don't, you know, maybe the reason that it kind of surprised me to see these numbers is I think the competition in Serie A for most season has been better than people have given it credit for. Of course, we know last season Napoli, how strong they were, but Roma twice broke their club record for points only to lose to Juve. So when you look at it historically, I know you're at six, five doesn't look that crazy. They did that already a few years ago. So I'm going to go with five with the caveat that they could do even less than that, which is really pretty incredible. I'm with you. I think it's pretty clear that the Champions League is their objective. In years past, they've danced around that question, tried to basically say it isn't, and maybe that's part of the reason why Marotta isn't there anymore. So we know that's going to be a big, you know, it's going to be their priority. But I think this is probably, this is definitely the best Juve I've seen since the Calciopoli scandal. Up there as one of the best Juves I've ever saw. So I didn't send you this ahead of time, but I'm going to ask you. I think I know the answer. When I tweeted, one of the questions that I asked was, you know, who's going to finish with more points between Napoli and Inter? I got quite a few responses from Napoli fans that thought I was disrespecting them, saying the poll should be really between Napoli and Juve, not Napoli and Inter. And look, as much as I like Napoli, and I've really come around, and Ancelotti's done much better than I expected, I think Napoli is closer to Inter than they are to Juve. So I want to get your take on that. You kind of agree with that? You feel like Juve is kind of their own category, and Napoli and Inter are kind of fighting for that second place?
Yeah, I keep going back and forth on that. I definitely agree at this point that Juve is in their own category, or else that would completely go against what I just said in terms of how much they're in the lead in the table, and especially goal differential. Juve is their own category. Juve is winning an eighth straight Scudetto. But in terms of how close Napoli is to Juve or to Inter, I feel like they're almost in the middle in terms of there's still quite a bit of distance from them and Inter, even though Inter are improving now, and that is good to see for all of our predictions that they would be second. But still, I feel like Inter is improving, so they are getting closer to Napoli. However, in my opinion, Napoli is still clearly the second best team in Serie A right now. And I'm just really impressed with what Carlo Ancelotti has done, what he's done with Lorenzo Insigne, what he's done with mixing up the midfield. I'm very impressed. So my answer is kind of a cop-out answer, David. I feel like Napoli are still far away from Inter, but also far away from Juve.
Interesting. Yeah, I definitely can see why you think that. And look, Inter's had an easy schedule. So look, they've gotten on a great streak since they beat Spurs. Things are going to get a lot harder for them after the international break. So you can definitely point to that. While Napoli's had one of the tougher schedule, if not the toughest in Serie A, and Ancelotti's using the whole squad really well. But I still think Inter has more margin for improvement than Napoli. They are integrating more new players. We're seeing Icardi on a huge role now and the other players. So pretty fascinating. I have to say, you know, Napoli has definitely impressed me very much. And I'm a believer that just because Juve is such a juggernaut, there's still so much, you know, reasons to watch Serie A, even if you feel a Juve is well ahead. So now let's get to talking about some winners and losers over the weekend in Serie A. We had a lot of intriguing games starting on Friday. So let's talk about some winners first. We had Torino defeat Frosinone. Frosinone had made a comeback twice before Berenguer's last goal in the final minute. So Torino needed a win there. Frosinone are really awful. They have the worst goal differential in Serie A. Zaza also had a good match, had the assist in the end. So we have him as a winner as well. Then we had the Juve match in Udine. Ronaldo on the pitch, at least, is a winner again. That was a pretty sick goal on his part. Joao Cancelo continues to really, really impress. I think that deal for Juve just looks better and better. Obviously, he used to be on Inter. Inter at right back for Schalke had a good match. Let's see if he can match what Cancelo did last season. But Juve fans have to be thrilled with what Cancelo has done. As I mentioned on Twitter, to me, Cancelo is the player that Juve thought they were getting in Dani Alves, which doesn't mean I'm comparing him to Dani Alves. I'm saying Dani Alves came to Juve in the twilight of his career. They thought he could give him a boost offensively. And while Dani Alves had some really good performances in Champions League matches, he didn't have many good performances. I'd say Joao Cancelo's probably already had more good performances for Juve than Dani Alves. Let's see if he can do it in the Champions League. So impressive there. While Udinese lost, the winner is their goalkeeper, Scufe, who after coming out gangbusters a few years ago, struggled. That was a strong performance on his part. While DePaul didn't score, he did get his first selection to the Argentinian national team off his great start this season in Serie A. Then we have Roma, a big win against Empoli. Manager Di Francesco, 4 wins in a row. He's a winner. He's no longer on the hot seat. Inzonzi scored in Serie A. I think there's a lot of margin for improvement for Roma, especially because Inzonzi is starting to get used to Serie A. We had Cagliari, another important win. João Pedro, their midfielder, who came back from a doping suspension, is having a strong season for them as well. Then the early match on Sunday, Genoa, Parma, Piontek scored, but Parma got the 3 points. Parma off to a very impressive start. They already have 13 points. They've done really, really well. Everyone's seen the Gervinho highlights this season, but there's more to this team. And we're going to get a guest to talk about them because I want to learn more about what's going on there. Then we had Milan's win against Chievo. We already mentioned Higuain and Suso developing excellent partnership there. Also want to give a shout out to Musacchio. You know, Caldara has barely played at all this season, and I think Musacchio's performances is going to make it not that easy for Caldara to get on the pitch. Musacchio arrived with a decent amount of hype the year before, didn't do that well in his first season, but he's been excellent so far. Then your boy, Alex Ciro Immobile, game winner against Fiorentina. He had never scored against them in Serie A, got that off his list. He's on fire right now. For Napoli's win against Sassuolo, we want to highlight former Bordeaux winger Ounas, another player that Ancelotti has gotten going. He started this match. Feels he's probably started already more matches, probably played almost as much this season as he did under Sarri. I read that at Bordeaux, Ounas was kind of known as a breath of fresh air with his creativity, dribbling ability. He could be another intriguing piece for Napoli. Then we had Inter's win against Pal, Icardi with a brace. Wasn't a great performance by Inter, but look, we know all about Pazza Inter, how they underachieved. Them winning these matches in an ugly fashion is usually a good sign because Inter tends to play up or down to their competition, and the fact that they're beating the more provincial side bodes well for them. While Spal lost, we want to give a shout-out to their right wing back, Lazzari, who had a terrific performance. He made Asamoah, who's been excellent all season for Inter, look bad. On the loser side of things, I hate to keep harping on Atalanta, but I got to say that if Gasperini didn't have the well-deserved praise that he has, if he was any other manager, we'd be talking about him getting sacked any day. They lost at home to Sampdoria. Don't quote me on that, but I think I read that they haven't won in 7 matches. And look, Atalanta, in theory, should be off to a good start because they started their preparation before the rest of Serie A because of the Europa League. But so far, they're in trouble. Chievo, they look like the first. They lost to Milan. They look like the first team that's ready to change managers. Danna, who had taken over midseason last year, is on his way out. The two managers, we're recording this on Monday afternoon here in Boston. The two managers that are linked to the Chievo job are former Italy manager Giampiero Ventura and former Palermo and Sassuolo manager Iacchini. So let's see. Iacchini actually has a pretty good track record of taking over midseason and avoiding relegation. I'm actually in the camp that I think Ventura would do a pretty decent job with Chievo. Now, for them, things are getting really tough because they still have negative points because of their deduction for their inflated plusvalenza. I still think Chievo, though, has the talent to avoid relegation. I'm a big fan of Bielsa and Giaccherini. Players that creative don't usually play for these low teams. But I think they can do quite well. They have a solid defense and a good keeper. With a manager change that happens now, I wouldn't write them off quite yet. And the last losers are Genoa, lost at home to Parma. And interestingly, President Preziosi, after the match, was so pissed that he almost considered firing manager Davide Ballardini, who I'm a fan of, which is kind of surprising because you look at the standings, Genoa have one less match play that they have to make up against Milan, but they have 12 points. So they are, you know, with a draw, they'd be right there with Sassuolo and Fiorentina. So to me, that seems a little bit exaggerated to have Ballardini on the hot seat quite yet. I predict that if Genoa gets rid of Ballardini, he'll come back towards the end of the season. That's kind of something pretty typical of Genoa. And the last loser is defender Criscito, responsible on a couple of goals. I saw our friend Adam Digby, you know, I was pretty critical of his defending on Twitter. So those are our winners and losers for the week. Now, something that is always winners are our listeners that send in questions for the podcast. As always, you can send questions on Serie A. Transfers, right now it's the international break, so there are some transfers that come up. Your boy Hazard, Alex, is now the leader in the clubhouse for player most often brought up in international break transfer rumors. So you have questions on that, send them our ways. You guys know we love questions on TV, music, and films, as well as journalism and podcasting. So which ones are we going to go over today, Alex?
All right, David, let's start off with this one. What did you make of Juve's tweets about Ronaldo's situation last week? And could they lose sponsors and continue to see their stock decline?
So I texted you this, Alex, on Thursday, because we had Adam Digby on, and it was a great interview. And, you know, Adam touched on a lot of off-field issues with Juve. And when we briefly talked about this situation, him and I agreed that one thing we knew for sure was that Juve was going to handle this situation well, that if there was any club equipped to handle this situation, it was them. And boy, were we wrong. In defense of Adam, he's been very critical of Juve after. I have as well, although that's not typically the stuff I tweet about. But look, you know, for those that didn't see it, Juve tweeted about this shortly after we posted our podcast, and they were like, well, this happened 10 years ago. Ronaldo's a great example of professionalism. He's an exemplary person. We stand behind him. Look, for a lot of reasons, that struck the wrong tone. I think especially bringing up how long ago it was. I don't know if they were trying to say, well, he wasn't a Juve player when it happened. And them harping on how professional he is, I mean, that really has nothing to do with the situation. So definitely not Juve's finest hour by any means. You know, Juve, although they are trying to become a global brand, everything about what they're doing, you know, smacks of that. In that moment, I was reminded why my friend Rosso Anto from BTP back in the day used to say Juve is the most provincial club in the world. And he didn't really mean it as totally disrespectful just because they have a pretty provincial mentality focused on Italy. And boy, did that tweet live up to that. So, yeah, it was definitely very tone deaf. I totally get why they are supporting Ronaldo. Look, you know, I had the back of my mind when this situation first came out, I was like, you know, Juve is going to feel like they have to support Ronaldo, because when he was at Real Madrid, when off-field issues came up, he didn't feel like they defended him enough. But that definitely didn't strike the right tone. Now, as far as Juve stock, it definitely took a hit. Definitely the tweet didn't help matters, but I don't think that's the main reason why Juve stock struggled last week. Of course, when a player of Ronaldo's magnitude and he's the face of Juve's relaunch as a global brand is involved with something like that, that in and of itself, even if you tweet nothing, it's going to have an impact on your stock. But there were also other factors why Juve's stock struggled last week. Of course, Beppe Marotta's departure that was announced. Anytime a senior executive that's been so successful leaves, that is going to have an impact. And let's not forget that President Agnelli sent a letter to all the shareholders saying that they were going to take a loss during this fiscal year. But look, the tweet didn't help. I totally get why there are many people who are upset about it. There's really no defense, quite frankly.
All right. Well, David, I love conspiracy theories, so I like this next question. Do you buy the conspiracy theory that Real Madrid leaked the information on Ronaldo to Der Spiegel as a warning to players like Luka Modric?
I love conspiracy theories, too, and I pondered this one for a while, and I just don't think that's the case. And I could be very wrong. This is just kind of my two cents. I just think, you know, one thing that's being lost on this is the timing of this. Like, keep in mind, the accuser, Ronaldo's accuser, is based in the U.S. They're reopening the investigation into the events in Las Vegas. And you and me, Alex, we live in the U.S. We know how much the Me Too movement and all these, you know, issues with sexual harassment, and in this case, it's beyond sexual harassment, how front and center they are. It doesn't really surprise me that this issue would resurface now. You know, I could totally get why the lady that's in this incident, you know, now feels more emboldened to come out with these informations. You look what's going on in the U.S. You know, we had Bill Cosby go to jail. We had all the drama around the Supreme Court justice nominee Kavanaugh here in the U.S. Les Moonves, the head of CBS, like, right now, this movement is really taking over the U.S. So I don't buy that, you know, it's Real Madrid. I could be way off. I just think the timing, I think this is what's happening. And this goes back to the fact that why Juve's tweet just came off really poorly because of the environment that we live. And maybe, you know, it's because I'm based here in the U.S. I have maybe a different perception than someone that doesn't. So I'm going to buy more that the timing of this has to do with that than Real Madrid.
All right, fair enough. All right, David, next Twitter question. Do you think Juve will eventually regret selling Gonzalo Higuain?
It's a good question. And to me, this goes back to the fact that two things can be true at the same time. I think Higuain's already been a great acquisition for Milan. And I think for Milan, the timing just couldn't have been better, that Juve found themselves in a situation where they had to get rid of Higuain's, you know, salary from their books, also his amortized value. I mean, he accounted for a huge figure on their books. So they had to get rid of him once they added Ronaldo. And in Higuain's defense, Ronaldo's probably one of the only maybe two, three players that you'd be like, okay, he's definitely an upgrade over Higuain. So two things can be true at the same time. He's a great acquisition for Milan, but that doesn't at the same time make it a bad move for Juve. Now, look, everything else being equal, you know, would Juve be better off with Higuain or Mandzukic? Maybe Mandzukic is a better fit playing next to Ronaldo. I know Higuain and Ronaldo play together. I'm just not a huge expert on all that. So I don't think Juve is going to regret selling Higuain, but that doesn't mean that it's not a fantastic deal for Milan. I think if you're a Milan fan, you have to be absolutely thrilled for this deal, even if, God forbid, nothing comes out of Caldara, which, you know, I still think Caldara is going to be a fine player as is. But even when you look just at the deal now, I think Milan still has to be very happy with how it went.
All right, David, next Twitter question. Should Roma extend Lorenzo Pellegrini's contract to get rid of his low exit clause?
Man, he's been on absolute fire. So a couple of weeks ago, before he moved to the trequartista role, and that was kind of like a stroke of good luck, like in the derby, Pastore started, he had to come out in the first half. Pellegrini replaced him, played in a more advanced position than he used to before. He used to play as a mezzala, and he's been so far much better in the trequartista role. So look, that might actually work out well for Roma because De Rossi and Nzonzi can be more of the defensive midfielders and have Pellegrini up front. So I think they should definitely take advantage of this. Now, the question is, where does that leave Pastore? Because he's one of the players that has the high, one of the highest paid players on Roma. But if you look at Pellegrini in a vacuum, he has an exit clause, as I think, around 25 million euro. It's a no-brainer to extend them now to change that or take it off the table altogether. So shout out to him because he really looked like a player that maybe we had overrated before, but he's been outstanding in a role where he doesn't have to worry so much about defensive responsibilities.
Yeah, I'm very much enjoying him. In fact, I have him on my FIFA Ultimate Team. All right, David, next Twitter question. What are some of the underrated storylines in Serie A this season?
So, look, Piontek's been beaten to death. It's not an underrated story anymore. We've talked about Sassuolo a lot. We've talked about Spal, although they've lost a few matches in a row. We've talked about Fiorentina, you and I, as a great story in Serie A. But one that we haven't talked a lot about, definitely on the podcast, is Sampdoria. And I'm going to say an underrated story is Sampdoria's defense. Because, look, I've even described their manager, Giampaolo, as kind of like the striker whisperer. If you're a striker on a team, you know, and you've struggled in years past to live up to expectations, if you go to Sampdoria, he's going to get you going. Of course, we know Quagliarella, what he's done there. Caprari got a call up to the Italian national team over the weekend. De Frel's been off to an amazing start. We saw Schick, what he did at Sampdoria. But at this moment, as we go into the international break, Sampdoria has the best defense in Serie A. I've only given up 4 goals. I think that's the most underrated storyline in Serie A. Defender Tonelli, who came from Napoli, he also just made the Italian national team with Romagnoli's injury. But a player that's really stood out is Danish center back Anderson, only 22 years old. We've talked about him on the podcast again. He's been sensational this season. He kind of looks like the new version of Skriniar, who Sampdoria cashed in on a few it's 2 years ago now. And defender Berezinski, their right back, also very underrated, kind of like a Hizaj type, maybe a little more defensive than offensive. So Sampdoria's defense, to me, is the underrated storyline in Serie A. Their keeper, Odero, who was at Venezia, as Juve owned. So some intriguing storylines there. So we'll talk about Sampdoria soon on the podcast because I think they are a team that deserves a little bit more love on our program.
All right. Yeah, they've been fun for sure. Okay, so David, next Twitter question. Did Mancini make the right decision when he selected Sebastian Giovinco?
For me, an absolute no-brainer, and I'll give you 3 reasons why. A, he's one of the most talented Italian strikers, period. I know he disappointed at Juve, but when he was coming up, there were some legitimate comparisons to Del Piero. At Parma, where he was kind of like on a team dedicated to his talent, he was sensational. So in and of itself, to me, he's one of the most talented Italian players in his position. Then he's been absolutely sensational at Toronto FC. I'm not an MLS expert, but look, the guy can just ball. There's no doubt about it. And the most important reason, if you're even the most skeptical person about MLS and you're like, geez, you know, whatever he does there doesn't count, here's one thing that should count. The other Italian strikers that do really well at the club level in Europe, when they come on the Azzurri, they do absolutely nothing. And I'm looking at Immobile, a player that you and I like a lot. Insigne, another player that we like a lot, especially you, Alex. Belotti's done nothing on the Azzurri. So for me, it's an absolute no-brainer for those reasons. So good for him. I also have a feeling he's going to be very motivated. You know, Mancini seems to be all over the place with his selections, but I do applaud him for taking the risk with this one.
All right, David, next Twitter question is about the Azzurri. Any other of Mancini's call-ups that stood out to you?
Yeah, a couple. So we talked about Caprari a second ago. Good for him for making the team. We had Barella from Cagliari. He got selected again. I'm really intrigued to see what he could do. I'd really like to see him and Jorginho get an extended run of play together so they can create some familiarity. I was very happy to see Lazio defender Acerbi return to the Italian national team. The guy just plays every match, Europa League, Serie A. I don't think he's missed the Serie A game in a few years. And look, replacing De Vrij at Lazio was definitely a tall order. And I have to say, the reason Lazio, and they're, you know, they've been up and down this season. The reason they haven't been as consistent isn't because of the drop-off from DeVry to Acerbi, which I was my big red flag going into the season. It's more the other guys that we've already talked about, the Milinkovic-Savic and Luis Alberto's of the world. So good for him. Then we had a couple of late additions because Romagnoli, D'Ambrosio returned to their club teams, and Cutrone as well, who was a nice shout. It was good to see Mancini select him, although he wasn't 100% fit. So good shout out there, but we saw Tonelli be selected at the last second, and Valencia, a wingback, Piccini, who used to play for Fiorentina. So let's see what happens with the Azzurri. They have a couple of matches coming up. Definitely pretty underwhelming during the last international break. So let's see if these things give them a little bit more momentum.
All right, David, the next Twitter question is about one of our favorite midfielders here on this podcast. What are the chances Alon plays for Italy?
So I saw there are some rumblings that Mancini is having, pondering doing this. There's been some contacts with Alan to see, you know, if he'd be open to do it. Now, Alan hasn't been selected for Brazil. I'm not a big expert on the other midfielders, but to me, he's definitely in the conversation for best midfielder in Serie A, one of the best box-to-box midfielders that I've seen in a while. Really reminds me of vintage Vidal. The only thing is he doesn't score like Vidal does, but he's just all over the place, quality player in both phases. I read on Gazzetta dello Sport that he does have an Italian passport, so there's definitely a lot of momentum for that happening. Now, look, you know, is it great that Italy, Jorginho and Alan, if they're in the midfield? Maybe not, but look, Italy could use any talent they can have, and if Brazil is crazy enough not to select them, he could be Italy's, you know, someone else's trash could be Italy's treasure. Mancini has denied publicly that there's talks about this, and we're not surprised he would make that denial. So I think there's a pretty decent chance this happens. Another player that had been linked to potentially playing on the Azzurri was Diarra for Napoli, but he accepted the selection from his other national team, so that probably won't happen. But Alan, you know, look, if your club can buy Alan, that's great. So if the Italian team can somehow add him, then that's great too.
All right. I love Alan. He's also on my FIFA Ultimate Team. He should be playing for the Azzurri and or Brazil, because, well, he can't play for both, but he is good enough to play for either country. He absolutely is. You speak of the Brazil midfield as good, but absolutely could have Alon in that midfield as well. All right, David, next Twitter question. Why does ESPN only show less popular Serie A games on TV?
It's a good question. And look, just like many people, when the ESPN announced that they would have one game a week and the rest would be on the app, like most people, I assumed, okay, Ronaldo's game is going to be on the ESPN, ESPN2, ESPN News, everything else on the app. And that's not at all how it's been so far. I think we've had one Ronaldo game on TV. And look, ESPN, the main reason they bought Serie A was to promote their ESPN Plus app. They want people that are into Serie A to subscribe to the app. I think they use the game of the week. They want all the good games essentially on the app so more people subscribe. Look, is that maybe the best way to promote Serie A as a whole? No, it isn't. But ESPN has to also do what's best for them. But I've been told that I think you're going to start seeing more signature games coming up in the near future. The app is doing really well. Aside from that, if you live in North America, I mean, that app is absolutely amazing. For $5, you get all the Serie A. You can watch the highlight shows, the replays, boxing. They have NHL, college football. It's like the best bargain in entertainment. So ESPN is just trying to get as many people to subscribe as possible, but I wouldn't be surprised if you start seeing more of the key games on TV, on the regular TV as well.
All right, David, let's move away from football for our last two Twitter questions. This is a good one. What's a better film, Goodfellas or The Godfather?
So we haven't done a lot of pop culture ones in a while. So with the international break, we're going to throw them in. I have a few more good ones waiting. I have a great one on The Wire, one on Nicolas Cage that we'll get to in other episodes. But keep sending them in. You guys know I love talking movies and music. So the specific question is better film, Goodfellas or Godfather? So if I go strictly by better film, I think it's The Godfather. And I have to say, for a long time, I used to prefer Godfather 2 to Godfather 1. But I'm now firmly in the camp that the original Godfather is the best movie I ever saw. Unlike Godfather 2, where they go to Cuba, they go to Italy, there's the De Niro as Brando flashback. It's kind of a, you know, very vast landscape, if you will, both in timelines and locations. Godfather 1 is kind of a, you know, much narrower story. It's just a perfect film. If you rewatch it again, it just, you know, it really could just come out now, and it's been around for a very, very long time. So I think it's the best film ever made. Now, what movie would I much rather rewatch? Definitely Goodfellas. I think it's right up there as maybe the most rewatchable movie, maybe with Pulp Fiction, something like that. Just a much more enjoyable movie. It's definitely hilarious. There are a lot of really, really funny moments. The mob stuff is great in it too. So it really comes down to, you know, what's better versus rewatchable. So it might be a cop out, but that's my answer there. And honestly, this has been, I've been watching these movies for a very, very long time. So this was a long deliberation, but I've come down on that.
All right, David, here is our last Twitter question. What's your take on the movie A Star Is Born?
So I went to see this on Saturday night. It's the movie on music with Bradley Cooper and Lady Gaga. Bradley Cooper directed it, co-wrote, produced it, and is the star of the film. So this is a remake they've done, I think, maybe two other or three other versions of this in Hollywood with different actors. I was really impressed. And look, you know, there's a reason Hollywood has certain formulas for movies where you kind of know exactly what the plot line is going to be. Like, you can see the major plot lines coming a mile away in this movie, and that's perfectly fine. It's a 2-hour and 15-minute movie. I not once looked at my watch, and that's usually how I know a movie had my attention the whole time. I was really impressed. So Bradley Cooper is his first movie he directed. He wanted to direct his first movie at the age of 42 because that's the age his idol Clint Eastwood, and they had done American Sniper together, directed his first movie. And I was so impressed with it. So, you know, it's the story. Bradley Cooper's an aging rock star that discovers Lady Gaga, who becomes this great pop star, and he kind of mentors her as his career is taking a career for the as his own career is taking a turn for the worse. You can basically figure out what's going to happen every step of the way, but that doesn't change that it's really outstanding. Bradley Cooper consulted with Eddie Vedder for the role. You can definitely see a lot of the parallels between the two, but he's kind of more like Greg Altman as far as an artist style. Really, really good. So Lady Gaga's fantastic in this. I definitely could see her winning an Academy Award for this. I really enjoyed her role. Definitely a great talent. So terrific movie. I think this is the definition of a crowd pleaser. I think anyone could enjoy this movie. It's a great date movie. It's also a great movie if you're not on a date, if you're into rock music, some great rock moments. If you're into pop music, there's some great pop moments. So just a really great film. I cannot recommend it enough. And speaking of recommendations, we want to thank all of our listeners that leave reviews for the podcast. I know we talk about it a lot. You probably hear it on a lot of the podcasts that you listen to. Rating podcasts really help the shows that you like grow. So if you've yet to do it and you're listening to us on your iPhones, please go to the iTunes store, the podcast app, search for Calcioland, scroll down, leave us a 5-star review. Will literally take 5 seconds of your time, really help us grow. If you want to leave a comment, Alex and I read them all. We take your feedback very seriously. We try to implement some of your ideas. So thank you to those who leave reviews. Thank you to those who send us questions. We'll have a few more episodes during the international break. So now let's close with our rant from Alex Goldberg. And in the past few months, has taken Twitter by storm with his fantastic videos. Now he has a YouTube channel. So I want to latch on to this great success. And once in a while, we have Alex close the podcast on some rants of his choosing. So without further ado, drum roll, here's the great Alex Goldberg.
All right, David, I appreciate that. Now, as I've said before, these segments are always going to have loose ties to Serie A. They might not always be directly related to Serie A, but in some way or another, they will have a tie to Serie A. This week, that is no different. I want to talk about Maurizio Sarri. Now, overall, Maurizio Sarri is doing really well with Chelsea. Me and all of the Chelsea fans could not be happier with the job he's done. However, some Chelsea fans have one gripe with him, as we seem to never be satisfied, or at least fully satisfied. Now, I don't share this gripe, but I want to talk about the fact that some fans are very angry already that Maurizio Sarri has not played arguably Chelsea's top youth player, Callum Hudson-Odoi. He's 17 years old. He tore up the preseason under Maurizio Sarri, but he has not featured in one real game so far this season. Now, many fans are immediately saying, this is Sarri's problem. He picks the team. He doesn't like youth. Blame Sarri. But I'm sorry, not to make a terrible pun here, but I'm sorry. How can you blame Maurizio Sarri when your club, Chelsea, is famous for never playing their youth? Sure, Sarri may not have a great history with playing youth. However, he played some at Empoli, and if you want to point at his time at Napoli to not playing the youth, I would tell you is way more about how Napoli was constructed compared to Chelsea. Anybody listening, if you're a Napoli fan, I'd love to hear if you agree or not, but I don't think you can downright say Maurizio Sarri doesn't like youth. But even if he didn't like youth all that much, when you look at Chelsea's history with youth and you look at Maurizio Sarri's history with youth, you want to blame Sarri first? Now, so many people have said to me, yes, but Alex, Sarri picks the team. Sarri chooses who's going to play. It's Sarri. Shutty. It is not only Sarri. If you don't think Chelsea has some power in terms of who Maurizio Sarri plays, well, then you are way off base. Now, the number one player who is really stealing Callum Hudson-Odoi's minutes is Victor Moses, a player who many Chelsea fans can agree doesn't really have a place now at Chelsea and certainly a future at Chelsea. So it really seems rather confusing and definitely frustrating that Victor Moses could be taking away any minutes from Callum Hudson-Odoi. This does not surprise me, though. It does not surprise me that Maurizio Sarri has favored Victor Moses out of the gates over Callum Hudson-Odoi. Victor Moses is 27. Callum Hudson-Odoi is 17. But beyond that, I guarantee you, in some way, shape, or form, Chelsea has told past managers and probably has told Maurizio Sarri, we need to favor our veteran players. We need to favor the players that have played for us at senior level. They're not going to favor a 17-year-old right out of the gates over a veteran. So you can say that Sarri doesn't like youth, that this is Sarri's problem, that Sarri picks the team. But my problem with you, if you're saying that, is how can you look at Chelsea, who have a long history of not playing youth, and then look at Sarri, who has a much shorter history of not playing youth? How can you say it's Sarri when Chelsea are the constant? Chelsea are the constant. And I parallel this to everybody who's trying to pick a side between Jose Mourinho and Paul Pogba. Now, has Paul Pogba carried himself as well as possible? Is he the perfect player to manage? No, not at all. But how can you possibly side with Jose Mourinho when Jose Mourinho has a long history of constantly starting drama and being in the middle of controversy compared to Paul Pogba, who honestly, sure, he's had a couple controversial things along the way, but besides being a charismatic and loud type of player in terms of he's very marketable, Paul Pogba doesn't have even a tenth of the history that Jose Mourinho does with drama. So how can you say it's Paul Pogba's fault when you know this is what happens with Jose Mourinho? He is the constant. He is the one that creates the drama. Just like Chelsea is the constant. They are the ones who don't play youth. So you want to blame someone who just came in when all of the past managers also didn't play youth? How about you look at the main constant? And that is Chelsea. If you think that Sarri 100% is choosing Victor Moses over Callum Hudson-Odoi solely because he thinks Victor Moses is better, you are totally off base. There's always politics and who's selected and who plays, especially with the youth. So my moral of the story here is look at the constant. look at the one who has the longer history. Does it mean that Sarri shouldn't be blamed at all for not playing Hudson-Odoi? And does it mean that Paul Pogba shouldn't take any blame in his feud with Jose Mourinho? No. But if you want to decide who the problem is, where the root of the problem is, it's Chelsea. It's Chelsea, not Maurizio Sarri. So that's my little spiel. If you're a Napoli fan, if you're a Serie A fan and you have an opinion on this, if you think I'm wrong, if you think I'm right, if you have some more insight into Maurizio Sarri and youth, I would love to hear your comments. I would love to hear your replies. So if you want to reply to me on Twitter at Alex Goldberg underscore or at the Calcio Land account, I would love to hear from you.